Okay, so can we just start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, so welcome to today's edition of the Ondo IR teleconference, the 45th actually. And I think the main topic today will be the revision of the request for proposal, RFP. And one other issue is the time of this meeting. So we could try to shift it 1 hour ahead if the Californian guys agree to get up that early, because then Ki-young from Korea could join us, for whom it is too late to have this current time. So any opinions on that?
This will be, I mean, we will be changing clocks shortly too, right?
You mean because the daytime, the daylight saving time ends?
In 2 weeks, right. I think everyone is off daylight savings time.
You mean we're in sync with Europe for once?
Well, no, like next week is we're not. Next week we're out of sync.
Yeah.
I think the week after we're back in sync.
Okay, yeah, but I'm not sure about the Korean time. Whether there's also daylight saving or not.
I can tell you in a moment.
Ah, no, it's not. There is no daylight saving time. Okay, yeah, then that's great.
But you're talking about having it so we would have started an hour ago, you mean, for the next meeting, like 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Yeah, but mainly because of Ki-young.
Right.
For whom it would be, I think, 1 o'clock a.m. now, or maybe just midnight, I'm not sure. But if we get 1 hour ahead for him, just because the daylight saving time ends for us, but not for him, then it's fine. Then we can just leave things as they are, and just care about the desync due to the daylight saving time.
Well, I'm okay with moving it an hour earlier.
The reason why we are now here now was, I think, the request of Elisa Kent.
Oh yeah, right. Yes.
Yeah.
So we used to be an hour earlier. So. If she is okay with it.
No, that's a good point.
I don't see why not. But we used to be fairly early.
Yeah, so, okay, so if you, so Terry says that an hour earlier would be better, and if others agree, why not move this 1 hour earlier, and then for Ki-young it's even 2 hours earlier. I think he would welcome that as well. Okay, yeah, then let's do this next time. Okay, then let's come to the RFP. There are no more topics. Peter has hands up, is this right?
No.
No.
Do you see my hands up?
Or I see some signs here. Ah, typing. Ah, okay. Sorry. So I have posted a link into the chat where you find the Google Docs document. And there have been 6 major feedback points to the RFP at the last meeting in New Brunswick of the OMG. And maybe I just post these 6 points onto the chat. Okay. And I suggest that we now go through these 6 points again, and I have actually tried to answer all of them, and we just have a look at the answers. So the first point is, this is too ambitious. This project is trying to solve all interoperability problems. The scope of the meta language is too broad and ambitious. So now if you go to the RFP, so now I have to look where this is. So, sorry, I have to look around a bit. Okay, so it's basically in 6.2, unfortunately we don't have page numbers, 6.2 scope of proposal SOP at the end. So there I have added a paragraph. Proposals shall focus on the meta language while establishing onto-IOP conformance of a small number of logical languages and translations to demonstrate the viability of the approach. Establishing conformance of a larger set of logical languages and translations should be possible in principle, but is outside scope and will be left to the community using onto-IOP. So with this paragraph, I think we clearly say that onto-IOP, so answers to the RFP should definitely not include dozens of logical languages and hundreds of translations, and that would clearly be too ambitious. But we still have the aim that these dozens of languages and hundreds of translations will be there, but as a community effort and not as part of the standard itself. Does this sound reasonable?
I mean, I think that there's just kind of obviously a distinction too between we weren't proposing specific mappings, and because there's a bit of ambiguity sometimes, like specific mappings between ontology languages we might have as something in an informative annex, but it wouldn't be part of the standard per se, and we won't be talking at all about mappings between specific ontologies. The onto-IOP is really meant just to provide the capability for specifying mappings and evaluating mappings between specific ontologies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is also point two of the feedback, so that kind of connects specific ontologies and their mappings and so on.
Well, no, because here it says, while establishing conformance of a small number to demonstrate.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how specific that, I'm worried that that's kind of means that then, which languages are we talking about here? Right. I would rather kind of see this pointing to our earlier discussion about saying that, any proposals to this RFP should include, mappings of OWL and Common Logic and, whatever else.
Yeah, that's
in informative annex.
655. So we could refer to 655 here, where the set of languages is explicitly specified.
Yeah. So I would kind of see the first sentence there trying to reflect that a bit more. I like the second sentence. Establishing conformance of a larger set of logical language should be possible in principle. I like that. I prefer to see a forward reference to where we get into more detail. I'm just worried about when we say small number, that's open for a lot of interpretation.
Is there any way?
Yeah, but 655. Sorry, but 655 says it explicitly lists four.
Right.
So the
right.
number is really four.
Right. So then having this forward reference should. I hope it's okay.
Is there some way to respond out of line to the question itself? It strikes me that perhaps the right answer is, well, you should have read 655. I mean, you don't want to say it that way, but.
No, right, but having this forward reference, I think, is
well, forward references are very bad literally.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not good writing.
if you can,
I suppose you could introduce it in 6.1 or 6.2.
Well, actually, what if we said a small number of logical languages and translations, and then in parentheses as specified in 6.5.5?
Well, or as specified later in this document.
I'd rather see a specific reference. But I say after the word translations in parentheses, say as specified in 6.5.5.
Okay.
I suppose I could just do that now.
Okay, I have done it, yeah.
Okay.
Or you mean earlier, after translation?
Yeah, but that should be okay.
Yeah. Okay, so that should be it for point one.
Okay.
Or yeah, I think Michael, we especially rely on you because we just have these points and you have the whole discussion behind them. So yeah, then the second point would be, this sounds like a research project, not a standards project. Our response is provide formal definitions with citations to the literature where these definitions have been stated. E.g., what is the definition of logical heterogeneous ontology? Okay, now we have to move forward to the glossary. That's in section 7.2 or appendix A2, but there's also 7.2 there. And there I have actually for all the notions appearing in the glossary, all the terms, I have provided one or more references. And the references are in appendix A1. I have not provided formal definitions, though. I think that would be a bit of overkill. I think it's better to refer to the papers, and the formal definitions are there in the papers. And
I
also tried to cite papers that are not brand new, showing that these definitions and the theory behind it has been established for some time already.
Right. Yeah. So again, the idea being that we're not proposing new research. So this is research that's already been done. We're not addressing open research questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Conrad had a point earlier. I had a early conversation with him and he said another response to this is actually, I guess speaking with Elisa a little bit more in terms of having, someone, a company, within OMG, saying actually that this is something that they would be able to use. Conrad, could you maybe elaborate that a little bit more?
Well, I mean, their primary concern is that there's a market out there, preferably commercial, but it doesn't need to be. But so there's a market. There's users and there's vendors of software who are supporting those users. And if it doesn't exist already, ideally, it already exists in some way, and the problem is that there's no interoperable interchange of information within this market, and then this fills that gap. That's the ideal situation. And if that doesn't exist, then maybe you can look for other ways to convince them that it would exist should the standard be adopted. But you see, they're concerned mostly with they're in some ways happy to not understand the content as long as someone else does that is actually going to use it and it'll run software and have users. And
yeah, so maybe we could ask Elisa for a little more, like if she's her company is willing to be sort of one of the early adopters, if you will.
I mean, you'll have to have that anyway when you submit because you need a vendor software. Mm. It'd be more than that. You probably want to try to show that there's some expectation that there are users out there.
Right, and but
benefit from this.
would it necessarily have to be like a company that's using it, or simply providing actual, not just, you know, use cases, like here are the users, even if it's...
Informally, it's good to talk about, you know, who the people are who would be using it, like in your presentations.
Mm-hmm.
In the problem scope, usually you say something about the market.
Mm-hmm.
Say something about the users out there who are currently having this problem, and if you have this, then it would help them. In some cases, I guess the audience already knows this. People reviewing already know that it's there, and you don't need to mention it. But in this case, they're saying they are not aware of what the market is, so it's good to spell it out.
Mm-hmm. Right, I see. So that's kind of what the motivation behind that one particular question. This sounds like a research project, because I don't know of any commercial applications that are needing this sort of approach.
Right.
Okay, I have to think about that a bit more.
Well, it goes back to kind of a question I asked at the OMG meeting. We were talking, and you know, why did you come to a standards body in the first place? Why wasn't this, say, posted in academic circles as a generally available, like TPTP, or, you know, things that are not formal standards, but they're used a lot. You know, something like that, about what your motivations were, because you were thinking there's some benefit of having this be blessed, and that you're expecting some users out there and some vendors and so on. You know, just more about that as a problem statement.
Mm-hmm. So one motivation is, of course, that we are spending a lot of effort and tool development for this. And we hope that there will also be, or we know that there will be, users of these tools. Although, admittedly, most of the users are more academic than companies. So you say we need the market, that means we need companies that will say we want this, we want to use actually this.
Well, in the ideal case, yeah, there are people making money off this. However, I don't think it hurts to push the envelope a little bit and say, well, you know, academic users are users too. We can benefit from interoperability standards. There's no reason why OMG shouldn't be present in that area.
Uh-huh.
I see it. You're also saying, kind of, like, so there's that other kind of underlying question is, you know, why is this even being standardized?
Yeah, I mean, OMG is not normally approached by the academic community who's interested in fixing interoperability problems among themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When Lisa started, it was partly because they expected these little Onto companies, you know, to be forming like hers. So there was, although not a big market, there was some little market. But, I mean, I would personally support OMG stretching a little bit and saying, well, you know, I don't think it addresses the OMG's concern with interoperability problems. We want, of course, to help industry and help people make money, but, you know, that doesn't mean the academic community doesn't have interoperability problems.
But I think in this also, this is where the use case section plays a pivotal role, right? I mean, if these use cases are compelling enough, then that kind of addresses the point of, you know, maybe not a directly market-driven need, but, you know, it demonstrates that there is a need that is not currently being addressed by those use cases.
Yeah, the use cases are really important. Yeah.
But so, Conrad, you think that the use cases, we have 9 use cases currently, are not sufficient for themselves, but we need additional evidence that Antoine will be useful?
I think the use cases are supporting whatever more general comments you make about the users and the interoperability problems you're addressing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but that needs to be made more explicit then.
Yeah, I think the problem statement is that's where you say why you're doing this usually.
Uh-huh.
You say there are these people out there, they're trying to do this and trying to do that, and running up against this kind of problem. And
okay, so then we have to formulate something and discuss it next time. So, Michael, you also said you would be able to think about that. So
yeah,
help would be welcome. Yeah. So I have added some comments in square brackets and italics at the end of 6.1 that you need to do there.
6.1. 6.1?
Yeah, 6.1. 6.1 is a problem statement. And at the very end.
Oh, okay, just before 6.2 section header. I see it. Okay. Yeah, I've been in and out of the chat.
Mm-hmm.
Windows are covering each other over.
Okay.
You can build on your existing problem statement here. I mean, it's good. It's showing there's this proliferation of languages and so on. You just need to have something before that to explain, well, who's using these languages and why is this, you know, diversity causing this problem and so on.
Right. Okay. I'll take another pass at the problem statement.
Here's a fairy, but a facetious comment on the chat. You know, it strikes me that one of the things we're really trying to do is kind of recover all of those good ideas that are only partially captured in OWL, and we're hoping we can find a way to allow all that OWL data to be useful. Maybe that's not true, but that's my impression.
Yeah, I guess, if you can write some text up that would elaborate that a bit more, we can incorporate it. I see what you're trying to get at. I can't quite see how I could fit that in, but
yeah, I'm not sure myself. I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
We've got, what is it, 2 weeks for the next meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I shouldn't take that long, but maybe I can get something by the end of the week. Maybe.
Okay. So then let's move to, yeah. Okay. The second issue. So I have added a lot of references to the glossary. Michael, do you think that, and Conrad, do you think that this is sufficient? I think, yeah, it would be annoying to actually add the references to all the terms appearing in the document. Or should we have them also when a term appears for the first time in the document itself, that we have the references there as well?
Well, no, I think the glossary is good.
If you italicize the first use and they can go to glossary for the definition, then it seems like that's fine.
So italicize each term that appears first. And then people will know that they have to look up in the glossary.
Yeah, that's one idea.
Uh-huh. Okay. I mean, we could also have explicit repeat the references given in the glossary. I think it's not a big deal. Okay.
I think you're right. The idea of just citing where that definition appears is sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't quite that formal definitions.
Yeah. So we put all first occurrences of terms in italic, put references there, and have the same references also in the glossary. Okay, so the next point of the feedback is number 3, the role of translations and mappings. Will translations between specific languages, e.g. OWL2 and CL, be part of the standard? If so, will only one translation be allowed? What is the relationship between different translations between the same two languages? Will mappings between specific ontologies be part of the standard? Okay, so this is addressed at different places. 654 at the very end. So I have added a paragraph, translations between logical languages shall preserve, possibly to different degrees, the semantics of the logical languages. Between a given pair of logical languages, several translations are possible. One of them may be marked as default. A characterization of the trade-offs may ease the user's choice. I'm not sure whether you understand this sentence. I meant the trade-offs between choosing different of these translations between the same given pair of source and target language.
Which were you writing again? Sorry? Section 654?
Got it. Section 654, yep. Last okay. Paragraph. Last bullet item. Maybe we say a characterization of the trade-offs between or among different translations. Is this correct English?
Mm-hmm.
So the example was there are two translations from Old to Common Logic. One has the advantage that it ends up in a smaller sub-language. The other one has the advantage of being not so verbose. And so that's the trade-off, and then the user can choose.
I'm trying to see how we could express this last sentence in the form of a requirement.
I'm not sure whether it's really a requirement. I have written may because I think it's optional. So that if there are several translations, it's nice to have that you can characterize the trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether we should require that you always have a...
No, I think maybe we don't even need that sentence. A characterization. I think the previous two sentences really capture the essence of this requirement. I think they already do address the questions.
But this, with the trade-off, I like this. So then let's move this into the non-mandatory requirements. Is this okay?
Yeah, okay.
Non-mandatory requirements. Okay. So that was one part of this third point. The other part is at the end of 655. Okay, yeah, but that's basically just added there as well as a set of suitable translation among these,
mm-hmm.
among these required languages, AL2, CLIF, RDF, and RIFCore. And then there is, there's still another point. Just before 6.3. So at the end of 6.2, the last paragraph. The proliferation of specific ontologies and links between ontologies is outside the scope of OntoIO. However, an informative annex may provide sample ontologies and links for the purpose of illustrating the constructs of the meta-language.
Why don't you kill that opening parenthesis?
Yeah, killed it. Okay. So this addresses the feedback, will mappings between specific ontologies be part of the standard? And the answer is generally no, but there may be sample mappings and ontologies. Actually, in the old ISO working draft, we actually have such sample ontologies and links already. Okay?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, then point four. What is the need for the meta-language? this justification, what is the need? This is also basically the same question that Conrad already asked. So we have discussed this, but then this justification needs to be aligned with the mandatory requirements. Show how the requirements are related to the use cases. So what I have done is that in section 651 and 652, I have referred to use cases for each single item. And so basically each item in the mandatory requirements is backed by at least one use cases, and in many cases also by more than one. But then there's 653 to 656. And there I have not done this because these requirements are rather general. For example, 653 says we need an abstract syntax and a homo semantics and so on. And six, five, four and five say we need conformance criteria, and 656 a registry. So that's more about the general organization of all this. And I think each particular use case could actually do without these requirements. But then the problem would be that the whole thing would work only in an ad hoc way for one use case and not for many use cases. And I'm not sure how to express this, or maybe we just leave it out and leave things as they are now.
So we need a use case that illustrates interoperability issues.
Yeah, but that basically all of them do. But each use case, of course, only involves two or three different logical languages.
It isn't so the languages, it's the applications that you're talking about, too. Systems actually having to interoperate, and that's one of the reasons you want the registry. You want a central place where, or not a central place, but a visible place where different different organizations can meet and arrive at ontologies that map to each other.
Mm-hmm. So, but how do we integrate this, what you have just said?
Yeah. I keep coming up with these things. Taking action items for myself. I'll see what I can do. I'll try and find a use case description. The NCOIC, the another group I work with, does a lot of this kind of thing. Maybe I can find something there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Todd Schneider, I'm hoping he can help.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put that on my list.
Mm-hmm. So my argument would be, if you take all these use cases together, it's clear that you need 653 to 656. But I'm not sure how and where to say this.
We need them all together? Maybe that's something that I would have to be in the problem statement.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's a good idea. So that we motivate 653 to 656 in the problem statement already, and then we have it there.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's it. The problem statement focuses on the languages, not on the end usage of them.
Right, and I think the problem statement needs to have everything.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay. So then let's come to point five. How detailed are the meta-level relationships? For example, consider the daytime vocabulary. Do we simply say that DTV owl is an approximation of DTV common logic, or does the standard specify in what way it is an approximation, saying what is lost and what is preserved.
I think this is covered already in this discussion we had before, though.
I have one place where I have explicitly addressed this. That's in 6.5.1, the fourth item. That's about approximation.
Mm-hmm.
I have added there where the approximation generally has to be maximal in some suitable sense. So that's then more specific. So if you don't care about the approximation being maximal, then it's a very loose requirement, and then you could just use an interpretation of theory. Because then the approximating theory can be interpreted in the approximated theory. But if you really want to have an approximation, then generally you say, I have an OWL theory and want an EL approximation, and then you want the maximal, the largest EL theory that is logically implied by the OWL theory. And then there is research literature about saying, oh, it's the largest thing that is still equivalent with respect to some queries in some query language and so on.
Mm. Well, and perhaps. Go ahead.
And we have, in the WOMO paper this year, we actually have already added this to DOL. So there's a proposal how to deal with these approximations, and therefore I have written here to be maximal in some suitable sense.
But I think it maybe should be in those cases where a notion of maximality has been established, right? Because, in general, you can't say here is the maximal OWL definable subtheory of a particular first order ontology, right? Mm-hmm. That's an open research question.
That's an open research, yeah.
Right. But in the cases you mentioned, it's not. So mm-hmm. I think maybe what we just have to say here is, where the notion, the approximation generally has to be maximal in some sense in those cases where it's defined as, I'm trying to get the point where, where it has been established by somebody.
I would argue that it always has to be maximal. And in those cases where this is an open research question, you just should not use approximation and use interpretations of theories instead.
You mean don't use the, so you're saying approximation is defined as being maximal. You see, then the DTV case is not, the kind of vocabulary, you cannot have a notion of approximation for it.
Exactly, yeah. Maybe we can also leave, I'm not sure whether we need to fix this now, so I think that we're basically doing the work of the RFP proposals here. I think the RFP should be somewhat liberal, so with respect to this maximality. Therefore, I have put in there generally has to be maximal, or, yeah. Because if RFP proposers come up with some arguments why this maximality should be dropped in some cases, why not put this in? And if they think that it should be in there, and I know people that strongly argue in favor of having maximality always in there, then it should be in there. And that's really a discussion for the proposals and not for the RFP.
Right. So, I mean, I agree maximality should always be there, but it's just that maximality cannot always be proven.
Yeah.
So that's a little reluctant. Well, let's leave it here for now. Like I said, this might be one little issue we need to discuss a bit further.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then let's come to the last and sixth point. Are the conformance criteria for logical languages specified with enough detail to be testable? There I have added something in 655, namely the second sentence of 655 reads, conformance criteria must be specified in enough detail such that they are testable. See reference institution for an example meta notion that could be used.
I think that sounds okay.
That's okay. Good.
Okay with me.
Mm-hmm. So institutions are a notion that have been studied for 35 years now, and they're in the literature, and they can be used here, and then it's very clear that they are testable. So it's clear whether something is an institution or not. But of course, RFP proposals could also use something else there, but it's clear that there is something that could be used. So we're on the safe side. Okay, so then we are through. So then I suggest that we use the next 2 weeks to go again individually through this document, and please correct directly in the Google Docs. And then, Terry, Michael, and I have promised to provide some input at various places. And then in 2 weeks, there will be, this will be November 6th. So on November 6th, I would like to compile this into a Word document again and then send this around to OMG members for some informal feedback. And then on November 11th, it's basically 4 weeks before the OMG technical meeting starts. So on November 11th, we should submit what we have. Does this sound reasonable?
Yeah.
That's good. So meet back in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll see you all then.
Okay. Yeah, bye. See you. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Yeah, thanks.
Wait, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Conrad, for coming. You gave very valuable input.